information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Monday, May 22nd. Nice to have you along. Coming up this hour, where's the instruction manual for motherhood? As part of May Mental Health Awareness Month, we will talk to the co-founder and executive director of the Moms Mental Health Initiative, dedicated to helping women who face issues during pregnancy and the postpartum period. We'll tackle the stigma associated with having depression or doubts in early parenthood, and we will discuss how to improve access to those resources. That's coming up at 7:30. Also tomorrow, Ruth Conniff, author of Milked, along with a couple of folks that she featured in this book about the reliance of the Wisconsin dairy industry on Mexican laborers and the long overdue need to reform our immigration system so that there can be more legal immigration, so that Wisconsin's dairy industry can continue to thrive. Because right now, if you were to wave a magic wand and send every undocumented immigrant out of the country, you would not eat well and you would have no milk for your cookies. It would all utterly collapse. And there's a way to fix that. But politicians have to be willing to have some tough conversations and move away from their extremes. Late in our last hour, we were looking to give away Brewers tickets, and they are still available. So if you happen to know who traded Willy Adames to the Milwaukee Brewers 2 years ago this weekend, and you can go to the game, if you can have tickets emailed to you, and if you haven't won anything in the past 30 days, two tickets to tomorrow night's game could be yours just by calling with the answer at 844-967-2789. And again, if we don't get somebody answering that question correctly, those tickets will just carry over and Todd Alba will have a chance to give those away. But we'd certainly like to have somebody listening in the early morning hours be able to come away from this and go to tomorrow's game if they are free to do so. Now, tomorrow, Christina Laurie will be here. She has The Uplift. That's a review of some of the positive stories from our daily newsletter, something you can sign up for over at our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click on newsletter in the top banner. Or you can send a news tip to Christina Laurie. That's all one word, and her last name is spelled L-O-R-E-Y, Christina Laurie, at upnorthnewswi.com. She and Sharita Booker and I put all of our stories up on social media as well. And for that, you just search for UpNorthNewsWI. And this here radio show can be found on the Civic Media website. That's civicmedia.us, where you can also listen to us as a podcast. Instead of having to listen live, you can listen on demand on the website, or you can subscribe as a podcast and listen to it when it's convenient for you. So please do that. We'd love to have you along all this time. In our next segment, we will start things off with a little bit of sports. We will get the weatherology update from meteorologist Jennifer Wachitsky, and then we'll talk more about some of the headlines in the news as we move toward the Motherhood for Good segment, where we will get Kate Duffy, Nicole Slavin, and then a guest from the Moms Mental Health Initiative coming up as well. We've heard a lot about Infrastructure Week. It was kind of a running joke during the Trump administration, but now, thanks to the bipartisan infrastructure bill, things are getting done, things are getting built, but there's also things that are getting, shall we say, unbuilt that we're going to talk about in just a minute. First, it looks like we've got somebody willing to answer this question, somebody willing to go to a game tomorrow, Mike in Milwaukee. You willing to do that? Do you happen to know who Willy Adames came to us from?
Yes, I do remember it was the Tampa Bay Rays.
That's exactly it. We got him, and then we also got some other pitcher that we dealt to Toronto, and that's how we got Rowdy Tellez in pretty much the same deal. Pretty nice 1-2 package, wouldn't you agree, getting those two years ago?
Yes, they've added a lot to the team.
They really have, and I hope that you can enjoy the game tomorrow evening, and thank you so much for calling in and getting those tickets. We'll make sure Aaron gets those out to you. Have a great time at the game. Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it, Mike, very much. All right. Aaron's going to take that information off air while I tell you a bit more about the infrastructure that we were talking about. As I was looking at this morning's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I was looking at a story about, for those folks who, if you've been down to Milwaukee, you know that 94 runs down to Milwaukee, and then there's a bypass, kind of a beltline, 894. But then there's this stub, 794, that goes directly through downtown Milwaukee and then makes a curve to the south into a couple of south suburbs, Cudahy, St. Francis, South Milwaukee. And it's one of those, it's kind of a freeway to nowhere. It was supposed to be part of a wider system that never got built. And there's a debate as to whether this stub of an interstate should stay that way, or if it should be essentially deconstructed and turned into more of a city street system. And I've certainly, you know, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area has talked all about the need to take that down, take down the stadium freeway by American Family Field, because it too is essentially a freeway to nowhere. But then you also have people advocating to keep 794 as something healthy to the system. And it just reminds me that literally for decades here in the Chippewa Valley, in Eau Claire, we had this debate about where to reroute Highway 53. There was talk about an inner bypass and an outer bypass, and eventually the inner bypass won, and now nobody talks about it. You finally made a decision, you get things built, you adapt to it, and it turned out to be the right way to go for the Chippewa Valley, and hopefully Milwaukee will make the right determination of what they need to do with that Interstate 794. All right, sports, weather, and more coming up in just a bit. You're up north. Let's do a quick sports update at 7:15 here. The Milwaukee Brewers avoided a three-game sweep by beating Tampa Bay 6-4 on Sunday. Home runs from Willy Adames, Rowdy Tellez, and William Contreras. Owen Miller's hitting streak is now up to 13 games. Devin Williams, 7-for-7 in save chances, and the Brewers are sitting on top of the National League Central Division. Games against Houston at home tonight, tomorrow night, Wednesday afternoon. And then again, San Francisco, the Giants will be here Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Corbin Burns pitching tonight at American Family Field. Time to get an update on the forecast as we jump into the week. Jennifer Fichitsky is here from Weatherology to tell us about a couple of nice days. Then we'll see what we get in the middle before we head into Memorial Day weekend. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's an interesting forecast here ahead for this week. Overall, not too bad of one, but we are going to be seeing that kind of dip in temperatures here by Wednesday. A stationary front is actually draped across the state today. It's actually going to be a little bit on the warmer side with highs this afternoon above those seasonal averages for this time of the year. Upper 70s around 80 degrees across the board, when we should be about 10 degrees cooler. Upper 60s around 70 instead. Slightly cooler towards Lake Michigan lakefront. Sunny skies for everyone, though, to start out the work week today. Looks like sunny still for Tuesday. Temperatures pretty similar, upper 70s to low 80s across the board, with that stationary front remaining in control. By Wednesday, though, temperatures do dip pretty significantly as a cold front comes in, dropping into the 60s for most, a little cooler from Oshkosh down to Milwaukee, into the 50s around there. Looks like sunny skies for most, but a slight chance for rain starting to come into west central Wisconsin around Amory and Baldwin. But then it does look like a dry and sunny second half of the work week ahead, with highs getting back above average for most by Friday.
Oh, looking forward to that, just in time for the holiday week. Jennifer, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too.
Jennifer Wichitsky from Weatherology, meteorologist, joins us each morning at this time. We were talking infrastructure, and before I take a call here, we'll go back to the phones and talk to Mark in just a moment here, but wanted to note as well, it isn't just about roads when we've been talking about infrastructure. Governor Evers, for a chunk of last week, was making stops to highlight some of his own budget proposals about expanding broadband, higher speed internet across the state, which is really the infrastructure of the 21st century. And the $750 million that's been proposed for the broadband expansion grant program, basically, you know, there have been more than 390,000 homes and businesses who have received expanded access to high-speed internet, and something that, you know, continues to be worked on. It's one of those issues that the issue itself is bipartisan, but again, you have Republicans in the legislature that are just scrapping anything the governor proposes and then putting something up of their own, which may or may not be as well thought out, but really needs to be, because again, infrastructure is something that's going to create jobs not only in the here and now, but also in the future. Pretty sure Mark from Prairie du Sac is aware of that as well, and he joins us on the phone. Mark, good morning.
Yeah, what's annoying here, and you bring up the broadband as well, is that we could have had some of the stuff as far back as 2011, that the broadband expansion and as well as rail funding in this state. And now they're talking about going as far out as 2050. I mean, and that's like 27 years out now, and we're still, you know, delaying on this stuff. We're still debating the fact that we need to have broadband expansion in this state. The opportunity lost, the opportunity cost that Scott Walker cost the state. How much money opportunity did Scott Walker cost the state by refusing to take that money in his failed bid to become president of the United States? I mean, it is just and the Republicans continuing to not, you know, to drag their heels and not want to give a Democrat a victory in anything at all. That, I mean, the broadband money is just there's pennies on the dollar that we would be spending to get the economic benefits of that. I mean, and they chose to dump, you know, how many billions of dollars into Foxconn. And now I heard on an earlier segment that about the chips bill. Why the heck aren't they producing those chips at the Foxconn, where the Foxconn facility is now? Why don't they just immediately say, well, let's start doing this right here and right now, rather than this delay, and that it is just pretty annoying that that the Republicans continue to drag their heels and they want to get credit for this, but they don't want to spend the money on it. And that they don't want to see that government can do anything right at all. Yet they're perfectly willing to put their hand into the till and rob us of money that should rightfully be spent improving the infrastructure in this state, both in broadband infrastructure and the personal infrastructure and the people of this state.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, Mark. I appreciate the point. Yeah, you know, the Foxconn plant I know got talked about as a potential site for, you know, through the CHIPS Act and creating doing some of the manufacturing. I don't have all the details in front of me, except to say that I think that there was some sort of consideration for it, and that there still is a chance that it will, that campus will be used for something related to the CHIPS Act. And it allows me to underscore yet again that once the Walker administration and others made the commitment to Foxconn, the underlying notion is that everybody wants it to succeed, but you want it to succeed with a plan that is realistic. And it was never realistic that 13,000 workers were going to be building the glass for screens that goes on, you know, the top dollar products like iPads and TVs, simply because of, again, the cost of manufacturing certain components is always going to be higher here. And so it sounded like at best that Wisconsin was being sold a bill of goods to say, well, build it for this, but then we're going to end up using it for that. Okay, fine. But again, let's get value for our money. And right now you've got a bunch of big wide roads to nowhere down there. So let's get something that works for that area. But let's not put all of our eggs in one basket. And that's where I keep coming back to what Governor Evers was doing with the Main Street Bounce Back Grants, you know, that are going to eventually benefit 10,000 small businesses in all 72 counties. That's how you do economic investment. And to Mark's other point about not using money for infrastructure for things like this, and yet continuing to say, well, we are spending too much. Let's not complicate this. We're spending too much, yes, on tax cuts for the very wealthy. That's how this is working. We are this so-called debate, which is actually an economic hostage taking right now. This is about a debt limit that we're bumping up against because Congress, right after Donald Trump was elected president and run by Republicans, blew a $2 trillion hole in the budget. $2 trillion plus for tax cuts that went to the very wealthy by and large. And you can make the case, and a lot of people do make the case that, you know, tax cuts for certain high income groups, you know, somehow pay dividends. It's never actually been proven that they do. But look, you can make the argument. I'm willing to listen. But here's the thing. If you're then saying we have a problem with spending, well, before we start talking about cutting spending on veterans' health care and transportation issues and new jobs in the energy sector, you'd better be willing to talk about what kind of spending you're willing to pare back on tax cuts for the very wealthy. It's why the Republicans under House Speaker Kevin McCarthy do not have any credibility on this issue. And I'll offer them free advice. They never seem to take it, but it's the best advice they could take is if they were to show any willingness to say, well, we're going to give back a little of what we got in 2017. It's clear to see that, you know, everybody's got to feel some pain. You know, maybe we're going to build, you know, one less fighter jet too, you know, but instead they're actually asking for increases in military spending at the same time that they're proposing slashing veterans' health benefits and programs and doctor visits and other things that would come if you cut, you know, all discretionary spending by 22%, which is more or less what their bill is about. But they weren't willing. They're not willing to negotiate on a dollar of these massive tax cuts. And so as a result, you have a president that, again, has had to cancel a trip to Asia. If you missed it in our last hour, we gave a little history lesson here. This is not the first time that a Republican Congress has forced a Democratic president to cut short or cancel a trip to Asia, which would have boosted American leadership and prestige and market standing with potential trading partners. And as folks are still thinking, some folks still think China is what it used to be, which was very inward looking, was very isolationist, did not engage much with its neighbors, much less on the global stage. That's not the case anymore. And China is making all of these outreach efforts, diplomatic, and in some cases promising like military aid and things. And a lot of these Pacific Rim countries, these island nations and such, they don't have to be our allies. This isn't World War II, where we were putting bases there to thwart Imperial Japan. If we want to stay in good standing with these allies and be able to thwart Chinese influence, we need to show up. Half the battle is showing up, and President Biden's had to curtail this trip. And if you think showing up isn't part of the game, let's talk about Hillary Clinton and Wisconsin in 2016. Showing up is part of the battle. It shouldn't be. It is. And yet, the same thing happened in the Obama administration with a trip to Asia that had to be canceled or curtailed. And the same thing happened in 1995 to President Clinton, who had to cancel a planned summit trip because of a budget battle. The one for Barack Obama was going to be a trip to Indonesia, but again, it was because of a debt limit crisis and government shutdown. That's three different times that Republicans had Congress or had enough control of Congress that they would undermine not only a Democratic president, but undermine American diplomacy. It takes a lot away from the leadership that Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher wants to show. He wants to talk all the time about how we've got to thwart China and we've got to, you know, talk tough with China. Well, we can't do that if he and his colleagues are undermining American diplomacy in Asia every time that they want to manufacture a debt limit crisis. And it is manufactured. They've never had this issue when George W. Bush was in the White House or when Donald Trump was in the White House. It's a completely manufactured crisis, which does real harm. It's doing real harm right now, and it's going to do tremendous harm to your retirement investments and potentially to your job, depending on whether you're in and among the millions of jobs that are going to face layoffs or cutbacks if we go into a recession when America defaults on its bills. So let's set up that historical perspective as we move forward with this you know, so-called debate over the debt ceiling. And we don't have time to get into it now, but we will at another point have to discuss, do we just shut this down entirely? Do we invoke, I shouldn't even say invoke the 14th Amendment? Do we just state the obvious that it's there and therefore we shouldn't have manufactured debt crises like this? We'll save that for another time. We're up against a break. And when we come back, the Moms Mental Health Initiative, Motherhood Monday, is coming up next. You're up north.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Here's Pat Kreitlow.
And at 7:33, it is time for Motherhood Monday, when we talk to Nicole Slavin and Kate Duffy from Motherhood for Good, and their guest this week is Sarah Bloomquist, and we're going to be talking about something called the Moms Mental Health Initiative as part of Mental Health Awareness Month. Kate, Nicole, thanks so much. Good to see you guys. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, good to see you. Good morning.
Yeah. All right, so in bringing in Sarah, again, Mental Health Awareness Month has a lot of various you know, facets to talk about here. And one of them is part of that, I don't know, stigma or expectation, what the word is, but let's you guys can speak from experience, and then Sarah will as well. You know, when you find out you're going to be a new mom, it's not always, Kristen Lyerly laughed at me at the last round. I said, it's not a Norman Rockwell moment necessarily. There's a lot going on in your heads that, you know, I can't even begin to deal with, and yet you have to deal with them, and some people need more help than others processing that, Nicole.
It's so true, and I think there's this idea that it's going to be this magic perfect thing, and yes, there are moments that are wonderful, but your world changes in an instant, and you know, even if you have support and you have, you know, everything in place, it's still you know, you're learning and as you go, and you know, it isn't always perfect, and there's a lot of how do I do this, and you know, what if I don't feel right, and what if this isn't the magic thing I thought it was going to be. So yeah, really, really excited to speak with Sarah.
Let me first get confirmation from Kate. She might have said it was all perfect and just like a fairy tale. Kate, yes, no?
No.
what fairy tale? Of course, it is like a wonderful, wonderful journey, but it's tough at times. And I'm very lucky. I had a friend who, right before I gave birth, actually told me, she's like, it's okay if you don't have that euphoric moment right away, if you feel overwhelmed or whatever you feel is okay. And I was so happy she told me that. Just somebody giving me that permission that, like, any of your feelings are valid and it's not a fairy tale all the time was so helpful. We need a little more of that.
So that takes us to bringing in Sarah Orns Bloomquist, and Kate, since I've got you first, you want to introduce Sarah and what it is that she's doing?
Yes. So Sarah Bloomquist is the co-founder and executive director of Moms Mental Health Initiative. They are a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping moms navigate perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. Mm-hmm. I've known about Moms Mental Health Initiative for a while, but I actually got to meet Sarah a couple weeks ago. We were at a roundtable for maternal health hosted by Representative Vining and Senator LaTanya Johnson. And it was so amazing to hear from Sarah about the work that their organization is doing and all the other women that were there that, like, were sharing all their experiences and so many different things that moms struggle with, both during pregnancy and postpartum. So we're very happy to have Sarah on today. And Sarah, welcome. We would love to have you just introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your background and Moms Mental Health Initiative.
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me. I was so glad when we met, because I just love what you are all doing. And I am Sarah Bloomquist, and I started Moms Mental Health Initiative with my co-founder, Becky Schrader, and we really felt like there was a gap in care for women who had a baby and were struggling with a anxiety or depression. And when we went through it ourselves, I mean, I experienced it. Trying to find the right help was so difficult, and then you reach out for help and you get a provider who doesn't understand what you're going through. And sometimes they make it worse than better. And we just, as we connected with other moms, we saw that this is kind kind of the norm for when you're going through anxiety or mood disorder around the perinatal period, which is pregnancy up to roughly a year after. You can also include preconception and just how that that whole process lays out. So we decided to start an organization that just helped bridge people to the right help. And my background is in the helping profession and working as an advocate and pregnancy counselor and just kind of in that field. But I also have personal experience having gone through depression and anxiety with my first child and then my second as well, although that looked very different. And it was a result of changes in medication and that hit later. So it just, these conditions just look different on every person and they can be life altering. And also they're the number one reason women die from a pregnancy related condition. Mental health is the leading cause. I mean, it's just like, it's so upsetting and terrifying to realize that these women are dying from suicide and overdose and often past the typical 2 to 3 months postpartum. This is happening in 6 to 9 months. And in Wisconsin, it's an extreme health crisis.
Yeah, I know Representative Vining was talking about, and we kind of posted a reel late last week about the maternal health crisis in general. And I know Representative Vining talks about how it's actually even worse, you know, in Wisconsin. And there are things that we need to be doing. And I'm wondering, based on your experience and how you've done this, like, what are some of the biggest barriers that stop people from getting help? Is it more of like the stigma aspect of it? Or is it like logistical hurdles, issues with access, things like that?
It's really both, all of the above. I mean, stigma is a massive factor, and trying to fight that stigma is one component. The other thing is the disease itself is an obstacle. Depression, anxiety, they lie to you. They suck your energy, your motivation. It makes it, the process of finding help and seeking it and going after it, really overwhelming. But then access to care. We have a healthcare system that just isn't set up well to manage the totality of what goes on when someone has a baby. You go in the hospital, you're out a couple of days, you come back for your 6-week checkup. Oh, I'm struggling. Here's a referral to behavioral health. You call behavioral health and you could be put on. Well, I just had one mom that we're working with. She was put on a waiting list for about a year. And then when they called and said, well, we have a space available for you, she was too late in calling back and they filled her slot. And so she called when she was pregnant, and now she's about 5-6 months postpartum and not doing well at all. So there are so many ways the ball was dropped in that situation. So we don't have enough providers. We don't have enough space. We also don't have people really filling in that gap. And then our healthcare providers there's no consistency when you get with one, like some might be really aware of perinatal mental conditions and another might be like, nope, sorry. Like I don't deal with that. So there's so many different obstacles.
It reminds me of, I've got a daughter who's got to get on a list now for daycare and she's not even pregnant yet. I mean, how do you possibly know that you're going to need, a referral for a mental health issue? And so providing whatever information you can is good. I want to, Sarah, as well, kind of tackle the notion in case anybody's listening and saying, yeah, why are there more instances like this? And I think like a lot of things, it's maybe not necessarily that there's more, but that we're doing a better job of recognizing these things and not just hiding the stigma like, oh, I'm depressed. I must not be a normal parent.
Yeah. Well, and there's no doubt that coming through this pandemic that we've increased, we're seeing an increase in mental health conditions. I mean, there is that piece, but this has existed. This has always existed. And I think of all those women who suffered in silence and how many women may have died that we don't even know that we're suffering from this. And awareness is growing. It's not enough. Like we need more. And that's why it's coming out. But there's a tension to it. And there hasn't been any attention on it. Like it's just maternal health is just kind of like the last thing that we deal with. It's just, you know, and these conditions are not at all, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know if this is okay to say, but like the ugly stepchild of mental health. Like, nope, you go on the mental health websites and it lists, you know, all these different conditions and people they help. But then when there's nothing there about perinatal and maternal, it's ignored. And it's also, that just is just another way of showing like where we are in our healthcare system. Women just are put last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think too, it's so hard. Just speaking from my own experience postpartum, your brain is overloaded. There's already too many things that you already are responsible for. And you're absolutely mentally, physically just drained. You're exhausted. There's no extra bandwidth. But yet on top of that, you have to identify what's wrong enough to say, I need help. Who's the person who can help me? You know, all of those things. It's this insurmountable ask of women. So I'm curious, what would you recommend? Or what are the things we should be looking for? And what is the help that's out there? And I know that's a big question, but kind of where to start with that?
If you want to go like at a macro level, like we, you know, it's healthcare and insurance and the way that we're supporting women and doing more in the postpartum period and postpartum doulas. There's so many things in the macro level that need to change. But at a micro level, what can people do is from the provider's perspective, you know, educate yourself, understand these conditions, and really bring it up as a topic of conversation with your patients. It just, sometimes what happens is you're going through this and you don't have the words, you don't have the language to express what is going on in you. And, but if you're bringing it up at the prenatal visits and screening, there needs to be screening consistently throughout that perinatal period, then it makes it easier for someone to say something isn't feeling right. I think it might be what we were talking about before. Or I have this history, the mental health history, let's address this. And then for someone suffering, oh, it's just, you know, sometimes telling someone what's going on, they might not be a safe person and they might minimize what you're experiencing. And they might, you know, just say, well, you just need to exercise or, you know, try some, essential oils or get a massage. And then you're like, okay, I don't think they're hearing what I'm saying. But it's important to have these conversations with your doctor. If they don't bring it up, you bring it up. Make sure that you have a primary care doctor as well established, that you're just not relying on your OB for your total care. And so that they can also address your full health, a primary care doctor. And also, we'll reach out to us, like we'll get you to the right people. Peer support is crucial. And just realize you're not alone, that this is treatable, that you, with the right help, you will get better. This is temporary, but you have to speak out. You have to stand up, unfortunately, and find someone who you know who can also be that advocate for you.
And one more point in terms of providing resources, it notes in the article where you were mentioned over the weekend that there was a behavioral place in Appleton forming a new mental health training program trying to increase the number of medical professionals, case managers, substance abuse counselors, and that's coming because of a $310,000 grant from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, which is to say that for folks who might be listening, who might be, say, Republican members of the state legislature, you could increase, you know, the funding for that so that there are more of these resources out there for people, you know, so that whenever Sarah Blomquist and others are talking to new moms, that they have these resources to send to them, Sarah. And that's where we, again, appreciate so much you being here, telling us all about it. Nicole and Kate, thank you so much for helping us shed light on such a super important topic.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us, Sarah. This was so great.
Yeah, it really was. And it's, I believe, Moms Mental Health MKE is the address, right? Just want to make sure I got that too, because I've neglected to put it on screen. So there we go. MomsMentalHealthMKE.org. All right. We will be back with Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director, coming up next. You're up north. All right. So we are back now at 7:50, and I had to double check that web address. MomsMentalHealthMKE.org is for the Moms Mental Health Initiative. If you'd like to learn more information about what they do, and you don't have to be in the Milwaukee area to ask questions of them and see if they can't assist you in finding resources that are closer to home where you are. The time really passed, but there were things that I wanted to make sure we emphasize, that this isn't just a matter of talking to somebody, though that helps, but access to resources that could be done through our legislature, expanding Medicaid through Badger Care could be done. That would provide more access right then and there. So all of these things and more can be done. And if you have that question, go to MomsMentalHealthMKE.org. Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director, joins us now from the soon-to-be palatial headquarters of Civic Media at the top of State Street off Capitol Square in Madison. How was your weekend?
It was really nice. The weather was absolutely gorgeous, wasn't it?
Oh, it was just it's amazing. And my arms and legs are jelly because, again, we got so much yard work done and got the boat in, which meant cleaning that thing top to bottom. And, you know, that hammock sits there. So it's so tempting. And when you can get into it, it's great. But this was definitely as gorgeous as the weather was. Not a hammock weekend. There was too much going on.
Yeah, well, it's not. Yeah, exactly. There's too much work to do right now. Hammock season's later, after all.
But Memorial Day weekend, there will be.
There you go. There's something to look forward to.
Yeah. So as we look at the three things to know to start the week here, we've mentioned the debt ceiling, economic hostage taking situation multiple times this morning, and we'll continue to. But you know, it will, with President Biden cutting short his Asia trip, there will be back to business talking to the House Speaker, I would gather, today, right?
It's going to be another busy week of negotiations. President Biden, as you mentioned, he issued a stark warning yesterday that congressional Republicans could use that national default to damage him politically. And he's acknowledging that time has already run out to use potential unilateral actions like the 14th Amendment to be able to raise the debt ceiling on his own. So it really has to happen with Congress's help. And they have terms, and terms that the White House and any congressional Democrats do not see at this point fit to go along with.
And that's what we have at the federal level in terms of, you know, Republicans and Democrats locking horns about something, something that is not necessarily, you know, unilateral. They it's expression there? This is not this is asymmetric polarization is the fancy term for what we have.
I've heard that term. Yeah.
And similarly at the state level, you have local units of government who, you know, they can't provide the services that are expected of them without shared revenue from the state government. And again, that impasse, I guess, continues in terms of, it's not that Republicans are disagreeing with Governor Tony Evers. Republicans don't appear to be agreeing amongst themselves.
That's we're seeing some the gridlock is happening on one side of the aisle. It's between the Assembly Republicans and Senate Republicans. So what happened last week is, after a long stretch of negotiations, Assembly Republicans came forward with a bill that increases, as the governor asked for, aid to the vast majority of communities in Wisconsin, 15% instead of 10%. The thing is, though, they are holding firm on conditions that they're putting on money going to Milwaukee, and that would require referendums at the city and county level in order to raise the local sales tax. And this is something that actually local leaders, Democratic leaders, have gone along with. But the problem that Senate Republicans see is that they recognize that Milwaukee and Milwaukee County need help, but they do not see any sort of tax increase referendum passing at the city council or county board level. So no matter how the decision is made to put the question before either elected representatives or people in a referendum, Senate Republicans do not see Milwaukee and Milwaukee County getting the help they need. So this is going to be hashed out. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says that he's done negotiating. However, this might be all part of the show business of theatrics.
Yes, fact check, not true. He's not done negotiating yet. There's going to be more to come. Unless it is intentional on the part of, you know, Speaker Voss or others to say, well, if we just can't agree on a bill, then there won't be an increase in shared revenue, which is, you know, could be part of the motivation all along. And certainly if they leave it to referendum in Milwaukee and the referendum goes down, once again, they don't have to support Milwaukee to the degree to which is required for the biggest cog in Wisconsin's economic engine. I it boggles the imagination to think that if the tables were turned and the legislature were dominated by, you know, Milwaukee and Madison lawmakers, that they would starve, you know, rural schools and rural programs and things. And yet there's such a willingness to do the same to the state's largest city for reasons that are simply partisan political. It's a rough time. Our third topic here is about hard times for small colleges.
Yeah, well, yesterday, Cardinal Stritch in Milwaukee, a school with a long history there, private Catholic school, held their last commencement ceremony yesterday. Back in April, they made public the announcement that they just had exhausted all possibilities of keeping the university open, so that the end of this semester is going to be it for Cardinal Stritch. President Dan Scholes says the closure was the result of several issues. He pointed to financial problems, including a $6 million deficit. The pandemic put a lot of small private schools in a tricky position. The operational facility costs there at Cardinal Stritch were also a problem. And low enrollment. They really, really only had about a few hundred students enrolled at Cardinal Stritch by the end. And, you know, you need a cross-section of revenue streams, and one very important one is tuition. And when enrollment is too low, you lose a big revenue stream. And this is just not an isolated situation. Upper Iowa University, which is known among other things for its branch campuses around Wisconsin, six of those branch offices in Wisconsin are closing: Milwaukee, Madison, Janesville, Wausau, Prairie du Chien, and Southeast Wisconsin, Racine, Kenosha, and Elkhorn. By the end, only about 200 students were enrolled at those Wisconsin locations. And the Milwaukee site was pretty much operating fully online. And I think online education plays a part here. You don't have to go to a physical classroom if you want a higher degree. You can get that online, and I think that's cut into the business of some, especially smaller schools where the margins are much more narrow.
You certainly can in some instances, but certainly not all of them. Terry Bell, News Director for Civic Media. Thank you, sir. Have a great start to the
week. Thank you, Pat.
Good to have all of you here as well. Tomorrow on the program, Ruth Conniff, the author of the book Milked, on how Wisconsin dairy farming is dependent on Mexican laborers and needs Congress to reform agricultural work visas and provide worker stability. You can join me on Facebook. Go to Pat Kreitlow Up North. We'll see you back here tomorrow.